This morning I'll be talking about thriving. Thriving amidst the new abnormal. I'm going to start by talking about this new abnormal. Then I will talk about thriving. What does that mean to thrive? And I'll finish by talking about spiritual disciplines and how spiritual disciplines, the kinds of things we do and don't do here in this space and in our lives, can help us thrive, especially amidst the new abnormal. I have to warn you, facing this new abnormal can arouse anxiety. It's a troubling situation. And my hope is that sanctuary like this, safe community, is the place where we can look at painful truths together, hold disturbing realities together, and discover ways to thrive together. On the fourth Thursday in January at 10 in the morning, I tuned in for a live broadcast from the National Press Center as the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists announced the current time of the doomsday clock. The clock was started in 1947, founded by the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, who began in 1945. They were scientists at the University of Chicago who had helped developed the first atomic weapons in the Manhattan Project. They created the doomsday clock using the imagery of the apocalypse, or midnight, to convey threats to humanity and the planet. The decision to move or leave in place the minute hand of the doomsday clock is made every year by the Bulletin's Science and Security Board in consultation with their board of sponsors, a board that includes 15 Nobel laureates. The clock has become a universally recognized indicator of the world's vulnerability. The catastrophe from nuclear weapons, climate change, and even new technologies in emerging domains. Thursday, I learned the clock has not changed since last year. It's still 2 minutes to midnight. Now this, I learned, is not a sign of stability, but a stark warning, the chair of the Science and Security Board told us, Rachel Bronson, a state as worrisome as the most dangerous times of the Cold War, too volatile, too dangerous to accept, she said. The clock has only been at 2 minutes to midnight once before, in 1953. In setting the clock, the board asks two questions. First, is the future of civilization safer or at greater risk than it was last year? And second, is the future of civilization safer or at greater risk today compared to the more than 7 decades we have been asking the question? Since 1947, the focus of the bulletin has primarily been on nuclear threat. However, since 2007, the bulletin has included in their threat assessment the existential risk of climate change. On Thursday, as I listened to these experts, I heard about a new normal. No, actually, I heard about a new abnormal. That was the way the bulletin phrased it. The new abnormal. Let me share with you what I heard and what I learned about this new abnormal. Because as I listened to these prominent scientists and professors and leaders from government address this new abnormal, I thought that I was listening to the modern day prophets. According to the official statement, this new abnormal is a pernicious and dangerous departure from the time when the United States sought a leadership role in designing and supporting global agreements that advanced a safer and healthier planet. The new abnormal describes a moment in which fact is becoming indistinguishable from fiction, undermining our very abilities to develop and apply solutions to the big problems of our time. The new abnormal risks emboldening autocrats and lulling citizens around the world into a dangerous sense of anomy and political paralysis. Rachel Bronson, speaking to this new abnormal, calls it unsettling and unsustainable. I took detailed notes as I listened to the panel who had made the decision on the clock. The first speaker was William Perry, himself a Unitarian, the 19th Secretary of Defense. He began by noting stark differences between this age and 1953, emphasizing that the danger today is not so much because we expect an attack, but that we will blunder our way into nuclear war, political miscalculation. This day, this moment, holds unique threats of cyber attack, regional nuclear war between India and Pakistan that could produce a nuclear winter, and the threat of nuclear terrorism. Perry concluded his remarks saying this year is at least as dangerous as 1953. Next was Robert Rosner, University of Chicago, called this new abnormal a disturbing reality in which things are not getting better, a reality in which the risks of nuclear warfare and climate change, unchallenged, are ever more present and are not being effectively dealt with. Then Sharon Squassone from George Washington University, an expert on disarmament affairs, said reliance on nuclear weapons is up, reliance on diplomacy, arms control, and non-proliferation is down. Decades of work to reduce nuclear risk is under threat. Existing agreements are jettisoned. The New START treaty seems destined to die in 2021, she lamented. And the INF, the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty, the linchpin of European security for 30 years, well, the U.S. pulled the pin last week. Susan Solomon from MIT spoke next. She's an expert on the environment and following shifts in climate. Her message was of deep alarm, noting the U.S. has increased emissions after years of decreases. She calls our failure to stop the rise of our own emissions an act of gross negligence. Consequently, it means increasing human suffering and increasing ecosystem destruction, irreversible damage. Herb Lin from Stanford University followed Susan Solomon. Ongoing intentional corruption of the information environment that polarizes rather than unites, undermines rather than enhances trust in science, diminishes rather than increases confidence in elections and democratic institutions. Leaders, he said, complain about fake news, information they don't like, invoke alternative facts when the reality is inconvenient, shamelessly inconsistent, remember selectively and think anecdotally rather than using reason or scientific evidence. These leaders debase established institutions of government, journalism, and education that hold them accountable. Lin says they attack the very idea of rational discourse. It's an attack on us, Unitarians who value reason and science. All this is made worse by the internet age with the increased volume and velocity in which things can spiral. Jerry Brown, the four-term governor from California, gave the knockout punch, if you're not already writhing on the floor. He likened us to travelers on the Titanic, not seeing the iceberg up ahead, but enjoying the elegant dining and the music. This, my friends, is the new abnormal. So, beyond survival, we need to aim for thriving, not surviving, but thriving. And that's where I want to turn our focus. Given the disturbing reality that I've just described, let's talk about thriving amidst this new abnormal. The language of thriving I borrow from my favorite leadership guru, Ronald Heifetz. This morning I'm going to quote from a book called The Practice of Adaptive Leadership. The whole last chapter in this book is called Thrive. And I want us to imagine this new abnormal that I've just described in Heifetz's term as an adaptive challenge. And I'm going to define this for you. We need some language to get our hands around what's going on and how we might adequately respond. This language of thriving and of being adaptive and of adaptive challenges that require adaptive work and adaptive leadership. This is the language I want to introduce as the path towards this goal of thriving. Thriving, as Heifetz defines it, is living up to people's highest values. It requires, he says, adaptive responses that distinguish what's essential from what's expendable. Adaptive responses innovate so that social systems can bring the best of its past into its future. So listen to this as though he's speaking to this room. A congregation is a social system. We have a past. We have a future. Adaptive work is the work of distinguishing what's essential work from what's expendable. It requires focus. It requires we know our past, we know our traditions, we know our sacred stories, and we bring the best of that past. And we do have a lot of richness. We bring it forward into the present and future. This is the idea of thriving. Heifetz says, thriving is much more than survival. Thriving means growing and prospering in new and challenging environments. And my friends, this society in which we are living is a new and challenging environment. Heifetz says, to thrive, you need resilience. Shock absorbers to remain steady over the bumps on the journey. We need resilience and robust strength. That includes both health and stamina, spiritual health, mental health, physical health. Thriving and the robust strength that helps us thrive as individuals in a community means we need to take care of ourselves, our bodies, our minds, our hearts and souls. Take care of each other. Thriving requires resilience, robust strength, and something Heifetz calls renewal. Renewal. I love that word. It speaks to why we gather here on Sundays. We gather for renewal. And if we aren't experiencing renewal, my friends, we won't come back because we live in a society that saps us, and we need to find renewal. We need to find the place that recharges us. What is renewal? Heifetz says this, I like it, an active process of removing the plaque of tough experiences and scars from the journey. And we all have them. Plaque of tough experiences. Like we go to the dentist, we don't like sitting in that chair, they like scrape away all the plaque that's yuck. But it's there on our teeth. It can coat our hearts. Plaque. Got to scrape away the plaque of tough experience and the scars from the journey and return to the core of your values and being. Doesn't that capture well what this endeavor here is all about? We gather together for renewal, to remove the plaque of tough experiences. I don't know if we can remove the scars, but we can bear our scars and let the scars become teachers and guides. We come as wounded healers. And we gather to return to the core values, return to our being. This is essential work of the congregation. There are many non-essential, expendable things that happen. But the work of removing the plaque of tough experiences, tending the scars, returning to our core values, this is essential work, my friends. And tending to this work is adaptive work. I promised you some definitions. Here are a few. Adaptation, A successful adaptation enables an organism to thrive in a new or challenging environment. The adaptive process is both conservative and progressive, in that it enables the living system to take the best from its traditions, identity, and history into the future. See also thrive. Contrast that to reactivity. Adaptive leaders address adaptive challenges. Don't react to the anxiety in the system, but act out of tradition and core values to keep the focus on adaptive work. The adaptive challenge is the gap between the values people stand for that constitutes thriving and the reality they face, the current lack of capacity to realize those values in their environment. So we face, my friends, an adaptive challenge as we confront the new abnormal. Yet we continue to covenant to affirm and promote these noble principles and values that are under siege. This is an adaptive challenge, and there's no quick fix. There's no technical solution. It requires adaptive work over the long haul. We need to renew ourselves. We need strength for the journey. And this ought to be the place, one of the places, the wells where we drink deeply and find strength and thrive. I'll close just with a thought on spiritual practices. Richard Foster has written a classic book on spiritual disciplines. Foster groups them into three categories, and they are found within every major religious tradition of the world. There's something that is true and lasting and enduring in these practices. The three groups are inner, outer, and corporate. The inner disciplines are prayer, meditation, study, and fasting. The outer, service, simplicity, solitude, and submission. And the corporate disciplines, worship, celebration, confession, and guidance. Remember that plaque, removing the plaque? Disciplines like confession. I value it. I practice it. The idea of truth-telling. Honest self-examination, and lament, being contrite in our hearts for where we've fallen short as individuals, as a congregation, and as a society. These are spiritual disciplines, spiritual practices, and from the lens of spiritual health, I recommend everything that you do in this place, you approach as a spiritual practice. From moving the chairs, to brewing the coffee, to listening to a congregant in the fellowship hall talk about their dead cat. If you have that intention and that focus. And then that work becomes adaptive work. It becomes work that connects us to our core values and our being. It becomes work that is life-giving, not draining. And it becomes the means by which we thrive amidst this new abnormal.